My reading for this morning might seem a little strange at first, so just bear with me, and then I will explain why I chose this particular selection. This is an excerpt from a New York Times article. The author was Kevin Roos, and this was published about a month ago, January 17th. The title is "A QAnon Digital Soldier Marches On, Undeterred by Theories Unraveling." New York Times, Kevin Roos is the author. And here's what I want to lift up from his article. "Like any movement its size, which is almost certainly in the millions, though it is impossible to quantify, QAnon contains a wide range of beliefs and tactics. Some Anons are veteran conspiracists who have spent years exploring the theory's many tributaries. Others are newer converts who have only a vague idea how it all connects. There are law-abiding keyboard warriors as well as violent, unhinged radicals. There is no question that QAnon, which began in 2017 with a series of anonymous posts on the 4chan online message board by Q, a person purporting to be a high-ranking government insider, has outgrown its roots on the far-right fringes. It is now a big tent conspiracy theory community that includes left-wing yoga moms, anti-lockdown libertarians, and stop the steal Trumpists. QAnon believers are young and old, male and female, educated and not. Every community in America has its fair share of them, dentists and firefighters and real estate agents who disappeared down a social media rabbit hole one day and never came back. This is not just young male incels who live in their parents' basements and can't get a real job, said Mike Rothschild, a conspiracy theory researcher who is writing a book about QAnon. QAnon gives you a target to point your anger at, and it gives you something to do about it. That's something that can appeal to anyone who is disaffected in any way. What attracts Ms. Gilbert and many other people to QAnon isn't just the content of the conspiracy theory itself. It's the community and sense of mission it provides. New QAnon believers are invited to chat rooms and group texts, and their posts are showered with likes and retweets. They make friends and are told that they are not lonely Facebook addicts squinting at zoomed-in paparazzi photos, but patriots gathering intel for a righteous revolution. So you're probably wondering why I wanted to share that reading with you. And don't worry, my sermon itself is not about QAnon. And I, like you, I've probably heard quite enough about QAnon in recent months. What I want to think about this morning with you was where your church might go from here as we all look forward to the easing of the COVID-19 pandemic. Looking forward, while at the same time looking back as part of your celebration of the 20th anniversary of this congregation. The challenge that your congregation met last year in adapting creatively to the social distancing requirements of the pandemic are much the same kind of challenges that this congregation had to tackle when I was your minister 20 years ago. I suspect that your congregation is now asking the same essential questions that we faced back then. Where do we meet? How do we let people know that we're here? How do we welcome new members? How do we care for each other? How do we raise money to pay for it all? I'm sure you'll work that all out. But beyond those questions are the questions that congregations always have running in the background, and that especially demand consideration when we experience a major shift in the world around us, like the one that we're experiencing now with the COVID-19 pandemic. How do we do church in the world the way it is today? What are people needing now? And how do we fill that need for their spiritual health and for our institutional success? That's what I want to preach about this morning. But I wanted to share that reading about QAnon because it put into words an answer to a question that I had been thinking, asking myself about QAnon, which is also leading to an answer to those questions about the way we do church today. So for QAnon, I was wondering, why would people join a group whose beliefs are so manifestly strange and then stay with a group whose beliefs have been proved wrong again and again? Why would QAnon followers be willing even to sever relationships with their longtime friends and family members in order to cling to this QAnon mirage? Well, I think the answer is in two words that applies to QAnon members and also to members of Unitarian Universalist congregations. In fact, these two words are important to all human beings. We all seek them everywhere. Our lives depend on them. To achieve them, we are willing to make enormous sacrifices. The two words are community and meaning. As social animals, we're always looking for community. And as thinking animals, we're always looking for meaning that explains the world around us. The world is chaotic and confusing, more so recently than usual. We're naturally social creatures, but making connections can also be difficult for us. We're afraid of being alone. We're afraid of dying. Our hearts break with compassion when we see the suffering of others. We need comforting ourselves for our own pains in the world. So we seek, all of us, first of all, a place to belong, where friends will gather around, and where we will hear a message that helps us make sense of the world. Many find that community and meaning in religion, some in a political party, or in critical race theory, or in a book club, or a philosophy seminar, or through online conspiracy theories. We want answers to our questions and comfort for our confusion. We want it explained, and we want to be with people who will support our worldview so we can ease off some of the doubting and defensiveness that we feel when we interact with people outside our circle. So listen again to some of the ways that Kevin Roos describes QAnon believers in that article and see if this doesn't also sound a little like a cracked mirror version of Unitarian Universalism. You have to change a few words, but UUs are good at that. Here's a quote. QAnon, like Unitarian Universalism, contains a wide range of beliefs and tactics. Some Anons are veteran conspiracists who have spent years exploring the theories, many tributaries. Others are newer converts who have only a vague idea of how it all connects. That sounds like us, doesn't it? And what about this? It is now a big tent conspiracy theory community that includes left-wing yoga moms and anti-lockdown libertarians and Stop the Steal Trumpists. QAnon believers are young and old, male and female, educated and not. Every community in America has its fair share of them. Dentists and firefighters and real estate agents who disappeared down a social media rabbit hole one day and never came back. Doesn't that sound like the kind of diverse community that we strive for? Maybe we draw from a different pool of people. And I hope that our churches aren't social media rabbit holes, but don't we believe that Unitarian Universalism has something to offer both yoga moms and firefighters, young and old, male and female, educated or not? So our church, or QAnon, is about community for one thing. And then what binds all these people together? Well, says Mike Rothschild, a conspiracy theory researcher who is writing a book about QAnon, QAnon gives you a target to point your anger at, and it gives you something to do about it. That's something that can appeal to anyone who is disaffected in any way. A target to point your anger at and something to do about it. Here's where we need to employ our UU skill of changing a word to make sense of other people's religious doctrine. What if we said our Unitarian Universalist faith gives you a target to point your love at. A target to point your love at and something to do about it. That sounds like a mission statement. Listen again to what Kevin Roos says about this woman named Valerie Gilbert, the woman he profiles in his article. He writes, "What attracts Ms. Gilbert and many other people to QAnon isn't just the content of the conspiracy theory itself, it's the community and sense of mission it provides. New QAnon believers are invited to chat rooms and group texts, and their posts are showered with likes and retweets. They make friends and are told that they are not lonely Facebook addicts squinting at zoomed-in paparazzi photos, but patriots gathering intel for a righteous revolution." This last year, a lot of us have felt like lonely Facebook addicts. Like it or not, we've all been spending time online, more time at home, many of us alone, or with just a few close contacts. Maybe you're on Facebook or on Twitter, or maybe it's just Netflix and CNN for you, but more and more this last year, our human contact has been mediated through screens. We've traded handshakes for logons. We've traded hugs for "you're on mute." We've traded actual chatting for the chat function. And church too has become this, Zoom rooms, not physical rooms. Now, granted how lucky we are that this pandemic came this year, not 20 years ago when this congregation was founded and the technology to meet virtually didn't exist. Closing the church in 2001 would have meant actually closing the church. This year, we're feeling desperate for human contact. But every year, always, we're seeking community, however we can find it or make it for ourselves. That's why we founded this church. And that's what this church still needs. And we've discovered, as we've created a Zoom church community, that the challenge and the aggravation and the loss of that switch also enabled some positives. At the Long Beach Church, we discovered that our weekly attendance actually went up when we moved online. We had former members who had moved away join us again from around the country, like Carol Winkler is doing today. We had homebound members who couldn't physically come to church able for the first time to join programs because they could attend them virtually now. For some people, Zoom church isn't a substitute for church, it is church. That reality is one takeaway from the COVID-19 pandemic that our churches will need to wrestle with as we go forward from here. Now that those folks have found us, we can't just cut them off again. So what technology will we need to include them? Cameras and high-speed internet, video and sound editing. How do we create hybrid spaces where some people will be in person, but others will join from their home computers? Lessons that we've learned during the epidemic might actually lead to a different way of ordering our lives that move us actually closer to some of our social goals. Folks working from home could mean in the future, less time commuting, less traffic on our roads, and less fossil fuel being burned. Remote work would allow folks to live wherever they like. Folks could choose cheaper housing, or they could find a housing location that satisfies other personal needs besides just the need of being close to the job site. If folks are spending more time at their home, they might be more likely to make friends with their neighbors, and that might result in more diverse friendships and relieve some of the current urban, suburban, rural divisions that control our political affiliations. Now that COVID has taught us which jobs are really essential, we might pay those workers better. And the great toilet paper shortage of 2020 taught us lessons about manufacturing flexibility and global supply chains that will be valuable going forward. But the most important lesson for our churches, I believe, is this reminder of the core existential longing among human beings for community and meaning. Even if we had to go online to get it, we still did it. And we learned, as we saw with the rise of QAnon during the pandemic, that if we can't find a welcome home in a healthy community that offers reality-based and productive responses to our need for meaning, we will accept unhealthy communities, preying on emotions, serving up falsehoods, resulting in destruction both of our personal spiritual health and willing destruction of the social institutions we've been taught to distrust. We will find a target for our anger if we can't find a target for our love. As we remake our UU congregations post-COVID, I hope that we will remember that community and meaning are the core functions of what congregations can offer and what people are seeking. Everything we do in church, worship, social justice, education, the choir, the book club, pastoral care, flows from those core human needs, community and meaning. Churches get into trouble when we start to let any of those products of the church take over the core of the church. Attend to the basics. Ask always, how can our congregation help fulfill the human need as social animals to be with each other? And how can our congregation fulfill the human need as thinking animals to make sense of the world? The first time I preached to this congregation was February 18, 2001, almost exactly 20 years ago. The title of my sermon was, "Why Join a Congregation?" I offered a couple of different answers, and then I said that all the answers came down to really just one answer, which was this: a congregation gives a person an opportunity to be with people who aren't you. I meant people who don't think like you, people who can do the tasks that you cannot do, people who will confirm that your anxieties are just part of being human, and who will also show you that there are other ways of being human beyond the way that you happen to do it. Today, 20 years later, I think another way to answer that question, why join a congregation, is with those two words, community and meaning. Or to use another phrase that is the theme of the month in your church this month, beloved community. Here's how beloved community is defined by Alex Capitan and Reverend Michael Slack. I read this in your newsletter. See if this doesn't sound like my phrase, people who aren't you. Beloved community is when we say we and we mean everyone. Beloved community is not homogenous. Beloved community is not like-minded, because we're not called to be like-minded in spiritual community. We're called to be like-hearted. Beloved community is not devoid of conflict. Beloved community is not easy. When we avoid conflict in order to get along, we're not practicing beloved community, because beloved community exists when we trust each other, when we have the relationships, the strong enough relationships to actually disagree with each other, to be in conflict, even to risk hurting each other, and we can stay in relationship through those disagreements and conflict and potential hurt. That's practicing beloved community. I might be able to reduce that idea even further. From a church of people who aren't you, or from beloved community, to a single word, encompassing both community and meaning, a word appropriate for Valentine's Day. The word is love, a church of love. We began our morning together with an invitation to circle round, to keep the circle whole. The center of that circle, I believe, the gravitational force that draws us together, the heart of community and the flame that illuminates meaning, is love. Love is the spirit of this congregation, we affirm together. Megan said that the chalice lighting reminds us of our dedication to make love tangible, a target to point your love at, and something to do about it. The second time I preached for this congregation was August 26, 2001. My sermon title was UU Essentials. And then the third time I preached for you was September 9th, 2001, 2 days before the September 11th plane attacks. My sermon title that day was A Loving God and a Suffering World. In our chalice lighting this morning, Jennifer Grayson told us, we light this chalice together in the knowledge that love, not fear, can change this world. Sadly, we learned on September 11, 2001, and learned again last month at the U.S. Capitol, that unfortunately, fear too is also capable of changing the world. If people don't have healthy places to form community and find meaning, they will seek community and make meaning in unhealthy ways. As we reform our churches post-COVID, let us keep forever before us society's desperate need and our mission to be a healthy source of the community and meaning that all people seek. With love, we make the bonds that hold us in community. With love, we learn the meaning that makes sense of the world. Thank you for listening.